Warning, the Catholic Man Show is about to begin. If you're looking for a dull, feel-good religion, or clap your hands, sit around the campfire, kumbaya, you've come to the wrong place. We are dealing with toxic levels of authentic masculinity. I would say good luck, but luck is for pagans.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. I'm Adam Minahan, sitting here with David Niles. Already enjoying a nice glass of whiskey today.
I feel like this is the whiskey that we should be drinking more of here in Oklahoma.
Yes. This whiskey is called Redneck Riviera, and it is brought to you by my lovely, amazing mother-in-law, Shelley Boutwell.
Holla, Shelley. Do you think she listens? We'll find out. Shelley. If you listen, you call me.
Yep.
You better call me, Shelley.
We're really excited about this episode. We're going to have Matt.
I have a question.
Okay, go ahead.
How would you define, in layman terms, Riviera? Go ahead. In your own words.
In my own words? I would say a river running through a bunch of mountains.
I feel like it's a river.
Yeah, it's a river running through.
Right?
Yeah. That's what I would say.
It's like a beautiful river.
It's like, imagine like a John Wayne movie and him running with a.
There's definitely horses and cowboy hats involved.
A bunch of cows, and you're like taking these cows elsewhere to the Rio Grande, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And salmon, trout.
Yeah.
Fish.
So that's in layman's terms, that's what I would say.
Now, how would you define a redneck Riviera? It's essentially a bathtub with a drain.
With a nice picture of sunset.
Woohoo!
We're going to have Matt Nelson on the second half of this show. We're really excited. He is the author of a new book called Just Whatever, How to Help the Spirituality in Different Find Beliefs That Really Matter. Brought to you by Catholic Answers Press. Find it on shop.catholic.com. If this is your first time listening to the Catholic Man Show, we do three things every episode. We open, review, and enjoy a man beverage. That's what we are doing right now. We highlight a man gear, and then we have a manly discussion. Now, I want to say that this Redneck Riviera is a very simple bottle.
It is.
It says...
It's even plastic.
It says, work hard, play hard on it.
Mm-hmm.
It is a whiskey, a small batch whiskey with vanilla, honey smoothness, and subtle oak finishes. Now, this was a gift that I received on my 32nd birthday from my mother-in-law.
Yeah, you are old.
But that's not all she got me. She got me also an expedition to go noodling.
Did you go?
I haven't gone yet.
Because I knew you were maybe going to go the other day. Right. I got that text message that...
Yes.
Like, I might be noodling.
Yes.
I cannot believe I forgot to talk to you about that.
Yeah, because there's so many questions that come up, right?
So she, like, got you a package?
Like this guy that she knows. You can get noodling packages?
No,
it's not noodling.
It's noodling.
Noodling.
Yeah.
Noodling.
You gotta say it right.
Right. Noodling. Yes. So there's a guy down in Lake Eufaula in Oklahoma, and he does, like, noodling expeditions or exhibition. I don't know. Whatever.
Tell me. What are your
I'm super okay.
How do you feel about it?
I'm really nervous because she kind of called
about
me out
going underwater.
I know. Hold on.
And
hold on.
Essentially,
hold on.
Okay.
So,
okay. Sorry. My bad.
It's okay.
I'm just a lot of questions.
I know. So she kind of called me out on it because I said one day, you know, oh yeah, I'd definitely go noodling. You know, like, and I was kind of like joking, but halfway.
I was a little
serious.
Tipsy. Okay.
Well. So, if you don't know what noodling is, it's where you either go down underwater or you can you don't have to go in underwater, depending on where it is, but you use a little stick, a little bamboo stick, and you feel around and you find holes in the water. And then
in the rocks.
Once you find a hole that you can only do it through a certain time because catfish spawn, and when they do, they go into these holes, they spawn a bunch of, they're nesting. Yeah. And so they burrow themselves in these holes. So once you find a hole, then you go down there and you stick your hand in there. And
when they're nesting, when fish nest, they become very aggressive.
Yeah, they're extremely aggressive. So when you stick your hand in there and then the catfish bites into your hand and you rip that catfish out of the water.
And we're not talking about catfish. We're talking about like
monster catfish.
Like 30, 50, 80 pound catfish.
Right, they're like massive. So
like
if you have
the size of you.
No.
Some of them, well, I mean, you're but I mean like length.
Oh, length, yes.
Yeah. Like.
You're right. They're huge.
So they're monsters.
If you go down, you have to tie a rope around your waist because if you go underwater to grab it, you know, sometimes those catfish are pretty aggressive and they'll keep you down underwater. So another guy has to hold a rope and yank you out of the water after a certain amount of time. You say, listen, in 45 seconds you don't see me, you yank me up.
Right.
Regardless.
And like, so in Oklahoma, if you see a guy with pockmarks on his forearm, it's not necessarily what you might think. It could just be from catfish
noodling,
biting the crap out of them.
Right. So I'm doing, I've committed to, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do it one time and I'm excited yet nervous. But I'm doing it really for the story because you go noodling once and that's all you have to do for the rest of my life. I get to tell my noodling story.
Yeah, I feel like after you're no longer a noodling virgin, like just sticking your arm into the crevice and you have no idea.
I know.
What it's about to end.
And
like,
your natural reaction when you feel something slimy or something is to yank your hand back, but instead you have to push your hand even further in.
And you have to like grab it.
Yeah, and you grab it and rip it out of the water. I can't, dude, but it is going to be crazy.
If you
want to
catch, Oklahoma is the noodling capital of the world. I don't know if you know this. Maybe it's the noodling capital. It's the catfish capital of the world.
Mm-hmm.
We actually produce a bunch of cat. We have catfish farms like crazy here in Oklahoma. I don't know why, mm-hmm. but we do. Catfish is delicious.
Yes.
Okay.
I can't wait.
But if you want to catch a monster catfish,
Oklahoma's where is that?
Noodling is really the only way to do it.
Yeah, so I'm going to do this.
Because these are the kind of fish that if it were to like bite a hook, you are not hanging on to the fishing pole.
No.
If you have a jug or something. Right. Yeah, I mean,
if you have it on the yo-yo, it's not going to hang.
Yeah, it's gone. I mean, you cannot catch these fish.
Mm-hmm.
They're sea monsters.
So anyway, I'm really, really excited.
I cannot wait. When you do it, I want you to come back and tell the story on our Council of Man pay. You know.
Okay, I'll do it.
And so if you're a Council of Man
member, I'm going to fillet that.
You'll get it.
Dude, I'll show you the picture of the last catfish that this guy caught. Massive. Huge.
I want to do it.
I know.
But just like the thought of, and like, what's it going to feel like when a huge catfish swallows your arm?
Right. I know, dude. It's going to be crazy.
And, you know, people die noodling because, like, they'll be reaching under there and moving rocks around and, like,
a big boulder will trap
them. And
yeah. So if I die, it's because you're not praying for me enough.
I will pray for you. And okay. I'll pray for the fish.
Okay.
To be hungry.
So Redneck Riviera, that's the whiskey that we're having. Now, it's not a bourbon.
I feel like there's also guns involved with a Redneck Riviera.
Maybe. Some six shooters.
I don't know.
This is not a bourbon.
Maybe
though.
A pile of guns. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
this is an American whiskey.
This is a whiskey. Yeah. So, there's a couple of probably reasons that it is not a bourbon, but one of the reasons is it has honey and vanilla added into it. So
yeah. So a lot of bourbon, purists. I'm a purist. You know.
Well, by definition, a bourbon can't have any additives in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
By definition.
And
so
I personally don't like it when, you know, whiskey is flavored. I will tell you, though, this is delicious.
It's not like a American honey, you know, the whiskey that's American honey.
That's a liqueur. That's not even a liquor.
It's not like overpowering.
No.
Is what I'm trying to say. So
I got
to
be honest. Like, I am so guilty of judging books by their cover.
Mm-hmm.
Especially like when it comes to buying whiskey, I would take one look at this and say it's in a plastic bottle. It looks
what's
like
a fifth. Like, so, I mean,
yeah, that's true. Yeah. A fifth typically is always plastic.
Right.
You can get glass ones, but,
right.
Just, I would want to take one look at it and say, that's a cheap whiskey. It's not going to be any good.
But this is pretty good. It's bottled in Portland, Oregon. That's where my mother-in-law, Shelley,
is
from.
Very good. I wish, I would prefer if it wasn't flavored.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's cheating. All the same, this is delicious.
Yeah, because
it's very smooth.
Yep.
Does it say what year it is? It doesn't even say.
Well, it's a blend of a 2 year, and it's 95% 2 year, 5% 1 year.
2 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
So... anyway, let's
impressive.
Really quick, we'll talk about the reason why we drink. We're not drinking necessarily for the whiskey in and of itself, but for the conversation.
For the whiskey in and of itself.
But
the whiskey is good, and we enjoy things that are good.
Sure, but we're creating this atmosphere of conversation, mm-hmm. of brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to make sure that we say that we're drinking in moderation today.
Always.
You should always enjoy everything for its goodness and in moderation.
Yeah. People put down, like, there's a stigma out there. If you drink alone, that's bad. That's not true. If you're drinking a lot alone, that's bad. Like, I do this all the time. I sit on my back porch by myself, smoke my pipe, have a drink. I'm there by myself. Ain't nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So, anyway, thank you, Shelley, for this delicious bourbon. When we get back, we're going to jump into the man gear. And we're going to be talking to Matt Nelson in segment 3 and 4. So hang in there. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. Next segment, we're going to be joined by the one and only Matt Nelson. He wrote a book that you should look up.
Or whatever.
Which means just whatever.
Right.
Just whatever. And that's the name of his book, Just Whatever.
Yep.
Check it out. It's for the nun in your life.
And not N-U-N.
No. Let's be honest. If you know a nun, an N-U-N, they don't need anything.
Can we call them nons?
Or knowns? I mean, it's...
Nuns?
It is so confusing, like...
Nuns, nons,
Nun and known.
Yeah.
Anyway.
What's it in Spanish?
Dude, I don't know.
Where's Juan?
People think I know Spanish.
Where's Juan when you need him?
Because I knew shovel. El shovel.
El shovel. Oh.
El shovel.
So.
Juan tried to tell me I was wrong. I was like, you're wrong.
What do you know about Spanish, Juan?
Come on. I'm American. Anyway.
We're enjoying a nice whiskey this evening. Brought to you by my mother-in-law, Shelley Boutwell. Shout out, Shelley. Redneck Riviera whiskey.
Yeah.
Bottled in Portland.
Just be warned, we're about to turn the manliness up to an 11. Okay, so if you can't handle it...
What?
Now is the time to leave.
I thought when we started, that's what we do that.
Well, it's been at a 10.
Mm.
But we're going to crank it up to 11.
Don't like Kumbaya, so I'm good.
I can't stand that song.
Yeah, so go ahead.
You know what it means, though? It means come by here.
Hmm.
Kumbaya, my lord. Come by here, my lord. I still don't like it. No matter what.
Right. I agree.
Yeah. So, the man gear today, something that you might already have, but you didn't know how cool it was. It's a church key. I know what you're thinking. Dave, I don't own any churches. Okay. So I don't have the keys.
Right.
That's where you're wrong, my friend. At least I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. I hope you already have one of these.
I used to literally have the church key to St. Benedict.
That's true. You did.
For a full year.
A full year.
And then they realized how stupid they were for giving it to me.
Very irresponsible of it. I mean...
Right.
They just gave them to you.
Well, I was the president of the men's club that year.
Yeah.
Which warrants
I can't believe they let you be.
I know. Well, it was by default, really.
Yeah, yep. There were not a lot of takers that year. And so,
I didn't really want it, but I was the vice president the year before.
Which is another mistake on your part.
Well, I got nominated.
Yep. Good. Yep.
And I said,
you got to learn to keep your head down, dude.
No, I am trying to make a difference and be part of the men's group.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Me too. Just like me and St. Therese. Both keeping our heads down.
Just doing the little things.
I'm just a little flower. Okay.
In the garden.
Yep. Just.
You
can well go done. Do big stuff. I'll go over here and do little stuff. Okay.
Saintly things.
Yeah. Like a real saint.
Yeah.
You sinner.
Yeah. Valid. Valid.
So anyway, church key. That is the man gear today.
How many church keys do you have? Do you own?
That is a good question. I don't know how many I own. But I can tell you how many I use on the reg.
Okay.
And that would be 3.
That's more than what I was expecting. Mm-hmm. I use 2 mm-hmm. on the reg.
And I have 2 in the same location that I use.
I don't want to lie. I just realized I use 3.
3. 3 is a good number.
I thought that was excessive at first. When you said 3, I was like, 3? Why do you need 3? And then after contemplating,
yeah,
I realized... I too use 3.
So I used
Did
to
like
a,
that.
I too use 3. Yep. And I is almost like a Roman numeral 1.
I know.
That is amazing, Adam.
Quality puns here on the Catholic Man Show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shout out Shelly. She loves puns. Dude, she got me
I told you the manliness was coming. Yeah. There it is right there.
She got me a card game called the Punderdome. And it's all about making puns. It is epic. I can't wait. Play like we've only played it once.
You need to hang out with Jesse from the liturgy guys. I mean,
I
you guys,
love puns.
You guys could just pun yourselves.
They're so punny
to sleep and
yeah. Go ahead.
Anyway, I used to have a church key on my actual keychain with my actual keys.
I remember that.
But then I got married and I don't need it anymore.
I didn't know that was a causation.
Yeah,
because
now I have my wedding ring, which
right.
Functions as a church key.
That was the third one that I didn't realize.
Yeah.
For me.
So I counted that. That is yeah, also among too. Among my number 3.
Correct.
Yeah.
I have an epic one brought to you by Aaron from the Councilman. Now, Aaron, I may get your last name wrong, but it's Kesmetis.
You're terrible at saying things. Kesmetis.
That's exactly what I said.
Yeah, but you said Kesmetis.
Well, I had to sound it out.
There's no space. It's just
Kesmetis.
Kesmetis.
Aaron sent me one. And it
Where is,
is
it?
It's right here.
Sweet.
Look at that.
The leverage on that is not... It's nice.
Why don't you...
What is this down here?
Why don't you explain it?
Okay, so it's a piece of wood about 1.5 inches by 1 inch, I would say, in a cube rectangular shape. I would say approximately 8 inches long. With a round metal piece at the end, which is the church key itself.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of good leverage you can get
Charred.
Right here. Ooh, this is a whiskey barrel.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
a stave of a whiskey barrel
mm-hmm.
with the church key at the end.
Mm-hmm.
How long do you think we can go before we actually say what the church key is?
I don't know. We're halfway through this segment.
Yeah, I think we can keep going. I think we can keep going.
Let's do it. But it's a quality
like it.
Church key.
And the leverage. I mean, you can church key with that and not even hardly notice it. You know what I mean?
Also, the other one that I have brought to you by my mother-in-law, Shelley. She gave me a deer antler
church key.
Church deer key. Antler.
So I have a Vatican flag church key that I got in Rome.
Hmm. It's on your refrigerator?
It is magnet on my refrigerator. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also have another one that was given to me by my 17-year-old sister that has little magnets on it. It's got it has a rare earth magnet, which is a super, super strong magnet.
Okay.
To catch metal debris as it falls from the church key itself.
Hmm. Is it made of wood?
It is made of wood, and the rare earth magnet is in the wood.
Nice.
But it's so powerful. It can hold 20 of these
metal debris.
Metal debris that fall as the church key is being used.
Nice. Well.
So anyway, I think we've gone on long enough. A church key, if you haven't figured it out.
They're like aching right now. They're just like, this is ridiculous. This is terrible.
A church
I don't blame
key
you. I don't blame you.
Is a bottle opener. That's what a church key is.
Mm-hmm.
So if you Google church key, all one word, you will see it's a bottle opener. And every man needs a bottle opener. I have.
Can you explain the wedding ring?
That's what I was about to do. So
perfect.
I have my wedding ring is made of tungsten carbide. Okay.
Is mine.
It's an incredibly strong metal. It's one of the hardest things on the planet.
At first, when I got it, I thought that was a good thing. However, it's not. If you break your finger.
Yeah.
If you're in like to amputate your finger.
Yeah. If you're in a car accident, they can't cut it off. Right. That's kind of the problem.
So you're going to lose a finger.
I will just punch the car.
We weren't even talking about cars. We were just talking about breaking
your
finger.
If you're in a car accident and, you know, like break your hand or, you know.
That's not going to work very well.
That's like the thing. It's like, oh, I was in a bad accident. I ended up in the hospital and they had to amputate my finger.
Okay. Keep going. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Just don't talk about the wedding ring.
Distract me.
I'm sorry. Yeah, no, that's terrible.
You know what, Adam? Hey, I forgive you, man. I do.
Get distracted tungsten carbide. Easily.
So I have learned to open bottles with my ring.
Mm-hmm.
It is amazing. At first, it really hurt. I'm not going to lie to you guys. It really hurt at first. But I figured out how to do it. The trick for me, and Adam, I don't know if you have also had this experience, push the ring all the way down on your finger before you try to do it. If you have the ring like any
on your knuckle,
any up your finger at all, then it just the leverage it creates on your finger
the
bone
pressure
just is excruciating. Yeah,
your phalange.
I don't know. And for me, the trick is to not twist, but to just lift, just kind of like pull the cap off. Anyway. It's a very cool trick because when you get good at it, it essentially looks like you just ripped the bottle cap off of the bottle with your bare hands, just your manly strength, which is actually what I tell people when I do it. It's like, yeah, I'm just really strong. Just ripped it off. So it's no big deal. I can do it again if you want. So it's something maybe you should practice if you have a gold ring or a white gold. If you don't have a ring that's very, very hard, I don't recommend it because you'll get it all scratched up. And your wedding ring is more important than opening bottles of beer. So,
correct.
I feel like we can all agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And don't forget, your wedding ring is a sacramental. It was blessed at your wedding, ideally. If you had a Catholic wedding, it certainly was blessed. And so it is the sacramental of your marriage sacrament. And so, therefore, you obtain graces from it. Do not put it in harm's way unnecessarily. But anyway, having a bottle opener, especially at the right time, sort of like having a pocket knife, like the guy who is ready, you know, he's prepared.
Yeah.
It's almost like a hospitality kind of thing. Like,
well, it is.
It is. But even if it's not your house, you know, if you're not the host, you know, it's like, oh, boom, here you go. No problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing to have on hand at the right moment. So you don't have to carry one around with you everywhere you go. But, you know, sort of like if it's Christmas, have a pocket knife.
That has a bottle opener,
you know, like, or no, if it's Christmas, have a pocket knife. There's going to be packages with tape.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going somewhere that might be a good time to have a bottle opener, bring it with you. Get a small one. It goes in your pocket.
Right. So when we get back, the conversation is going to be enhanced exponentially.
Wow.
With Matt Nelson, author of Just Whatever. Go get it at shop.catholic.com. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm Adam Minahan, sitting here with David Niles, enjoying a little bit of Redneck Riviera whiskey. And as promised, we have Mr. Matt Nelson on with us, author of Just Whatever, How to Help the Spirituality Indifferent Find Beliefs That Really Matter. Matt, thank you so much for hanging out with us this evening.
Thanks for having me on, guys. It's good to be with you.
Matt, you've been a really busy man. Tell us a little bit about what you've been doing.
Well, a few months ago, I took a contract with Bishop Barron's Word on Fire Catholic Ministry. So I've been working with them with their mission and outreach office, working on some big new projects. And so I've been doing that. And alongside that, I just had this new book come out last month. So just been on the radio and doing podcasts and trying to get the word out about the new book. So it's been busy and obviously balancing all that on top of my family and my wife and my two beautiful little daughters. So
you actually try to balance it on top of them?
Yeah, we do that sort of thing.
Yeah, so before I forget, Just Whatever, his new book, it's called Just Whatever. Go to shop.catholic.com to pick it up. You know it's from our friends over at Catholic Answers, so you know it's going to be great. Just Whatever by Matt Nelson. Matt, so let's talk about this really fast. We're talking about really kind of the spiritual indifferent, the rise of the nuns, if you will.
Yeah.
And we're in this age, it doesn't really surprise me that we're having these issues, because if you look at, you know, the younger generation, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, 35 and under, I just want to make sure that I'm still in the younger generation. 32 and a half and under. You see that these people are not in, they're not joining Rotary clubs anymore. They're not joining men's groups anymore. If you go to, at least in our experience, if you go to men's clubs with church, it seems to be like the older generation and then maybe a handful of younger guys. It just seems like that men in particular, our generation, we're not joining clubs or we're not getting together. There's no community involvement, which also would translate into a lack of religion. If you don't have a community, you wouldn't probably have some type of religion or foundation underneath you. What are your thoughts there? You think that's accurate?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting phenomenon. It reminds me of Thomas Merton in The Seven Story Mountain. And I don't remember the direct I wouldn't be able to quote it verbatim, but essentially what he says, it's as natural for us as it is to plant a garden and to build a home and to put food on the table. It's as natural for us to do, it's as natural for us to get together and worship one divine person or thing together as it is to do those run-of-the-mill daily things. So I don't think interesting is the right word. I think we throw that word out there way too easily these days. It's an intriguing and maybe even a bit disturbing of a phenomenon that something so natural to us is something that we see so little. But it also, you know, kind of tweaked my attention there as you're talking about this. This sort of confirms for us some interesting research that's come out of Jean Twenge's stuff at San Diego State University. Now, I don't know if you've heard of her. She's the one that's done the research on iGen. But that's exactly what she's finding in the younger generation. She's finding that the young Americans today are essentially not growing up as fast as they used to. And they're not going out with their friends as much as they used to. They're not getting their driver's license as early as they used to because they don't need to get out anymore. Their phones and their technology has essentially sucked them into their own little world in their home, perhaps in their parents' basement. And it's like we're just too distracted to go out and have face-to-face time. And I think that directly translates then into what we see among men as well today. So it'd be nice to see a change.
Matt, I think, God, that's just so right. And it just pisses me off whenever I see just people walking around who are totally unconscious. Almost, I wonder if they even realize that they're alive. You know, they walk around with their face down in their cell phone. You know, the god of their own universe, this world that they create and I'm the master of. I pick who my Facebook friends are. You know, if I don't like something, I thumb it down and, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. They think that they are so important. And almost like they are totally oblivious to the fact that there are other people in this world, too. And if you would just look up for a second, you know, it's like, what? What are you guys doing here?
Right.
When did you get here? Do I know you on Facebook?
Yeah.
But it just is maddening that, yeah, like, are you not aware of all of this stuff? And it's like it's so consumed their brain, they've never even stopped to ponder the question of God's existence, does he matter for me? Because I'm my own God. Why would I believe in a God when I am God of my little Facebook world? You know, it just drives me crazy, especially when you're in line and you're just like waiting in line at the post office. And
you go to the post office still, man?
Sometimes.
Wow.
Like, or
how old school of you.
Okay, whatever it is, you know.
Those letters written.
You're waiting in line to get your, you know, the new iPhone as it's coming out. And it's just nothing but corpses in front of you waiting, you know, to get their new coffin to absorb themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the best images that's ever been, I think, thrown my way in regards to what we look like when we're out on the street. And I'm saying we because I know that it's been me before. But I'm becoming acutely aware of this. But it's almost like it's the Walking Dead out there. And I mean, we're sitting here talking about this as guys that appreciate technology and see the good that can come from it. But, you know, it also, I've been reading Dante's Inferno lately, and Dante portrays the dead in hell as being bent over eternally. And so that essentially means that they can't do that human, that very deeply and profound, you know, that profoundly human activity of looking up to the stars and pondering on life's biggest questions. And it's almost like we see that today.
Or even look another person in the eyes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So we're talking about like the nuns, and let's talk about it from a few different angles. Let's start out as fathers. I think that the rise of the nuns probably correlates with, I don't know if it's causation or not, but correlates at least with the rate of divorce. All the studies show, you know, if the father is the practicing religious person in the family, the head of the family, that the children have a much better percentage of practicing that religion as they grow up. So I think that one of the issues of this rise of the nun culture is a breakdown of the family in and of itself. Do you see that as well, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be a correlation between these things. What I would like to see more from parents, and especially fathers, is taking an active role in sitting down with your children. And this doesn't have to be like a formal, like, son or, you know, little miss, it's time to go sit down and have a serious conversation. But I think in those little moments, whether it's driving to the orthodontist or sitting at the table and eating supper, I think parents have to do a better job of asking life's biggest questions to their children and saying, look, you know what we believe. I mean, we go to mass every Sunday. We've put you into a Catholic school, or we're homeschooling you, and we're teaching you about the Catholic faith and what we believe is true. But I want to know what you think. Like, when I ask you, what is the meaning of life? What do you think? And, you know, kids start asking questions at a very young age. And I think often we might think they wouldn't be interested in questions like that, or that those questions might just be over their head. But I don't think so. I think we underestimate what our kids are ready to talk about.
Oh, yeah, totally. And I just think that's a great idea, because it makes them take ownership of those questions as they're ready. Because, you know, when you ask a little kid, where do babies come from? It's, you know, they give their own answer. It's appropriate for their age. When you ask them, what's the meaning of life? They're going to do the same thing, but
they can
kind of step into it as they grow.
You've given the example before, Dave, of your memory of your dad sitting down at the dinner table and telling you guys, nothing matters if we're not saints.
Yeah. Matt, I have this weird, you know, this is like a memory. My dad, we're like all sitting there eating dinner, just having regular, normal conversation. And then my dad, like, I don't know what came over him, but he almost stopped the conversation and said, kids, and a hush, like just the way he said it, kind of a hush came over the dinner table. And he said, nothing matters if you don't go to heaven. And we just all kind of looked at him. We were like, yo, okay, Dad. Oh, yeah, I got that.
10-4.
Anything else you need to say?
That's such a great example of how you can say something profound. And maybe at the time it's like, kids really didn't get the gravity of what I just said. But then, you know, here you are talking about this years later, and obviously that stuck.
Yeah, totally. But I think when we talk about kids, you know, they're becoming adults later in life, it's really just men. Women, girls turn into women, seems like earlier than they ever, you know, you see a 14-year-old girl now, and it's hard to tell sometimes, like, is she 14 or 18? You know, you see young girls dressing and portraying themselves like these full-grown women, whereas you've got...
The 30-year-old guy who's trying to get kicked out of his parents.
Who still, like, won't stop playing video games. Right. You know? And I'm not saying there's something... Like, I like video games, but that's not what I do.
Right.
You know? So, it's... And I think it really is fathers not being there. I mean, I haven't studied it. I don't really know. But that's kind of what I think. It's just dads haven't been there as a whole, as a culture. We've dropped the ball. And we haven't given kids something like a tradition to bite down on. But anyway, we'll pick this back up after the break. We got to step away, pay the bills. You're listening to the Catholic Man Show with Adam Minahan and David Niles. We're joined by Matt Nelson. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, sitting here with Adam Minahan in studio via Google Hangouts. We're joined by the ineffable Matt Nelson. Turns out ineffable is a word.
And you're using it correctly.
And it's a good thing. So,
I have to look that one up.
Yeah. It means like irreplaceable, hard to describe, like...
In a good way.
You know what? That might not be what it means. I know I looked it up and I was like, yeah, that's a pretty nice thing to say to somebody. It's a compliment. But so, Matt, you have this book. You wrote it. It's called Just Whatever, which is exactly, I don't know, maybe it's especially Canadian. I have never been to Canada, but our friend Patrick Coffin says that people are... Very, what's the word, Adam? Like, yeah, whatever. Kind of like your book says. I don't know, is this true?
Well, gee, you know.
You're going to paint it with broad brushes here, huh? Yeah.
Well, I think we're definitely that way with politics. I've learned that from as my friendships have grown with more and more American guys and gals. I've noticed that we take politics a bit less seriously, but maybe it's just when you get to the root of what politics are, it's really how does man thrive best and live together in harmony and realize his ends. And so maybe there's a translation there between, we just don't take the big things seriously here. I don't know, but in my own experience, I think on campus, I took 9 years of post-secondary education, so I spent a lot of time on post-secondary campuses, and there's no doubt that secularism has sunk its deep, its roots deeply into those environments anyways. So
on that note, Matt, let me ask you a question. To me, the question of God, the question of existence, these life questions that nobody can really escape, seems to be just so unimportant to the nuns. How mm-hmm. is it that they could not care? What happened that they don't, it's like, yeah, whatever, I don't really care. Mm-hmm. How do they not care?
Yeah, well, what I try to say in the book is that they do care, it's just they don't know they care. These are questions that have been around since man began to think. Atheist philosopher Alexander Rosenberg calls them life's persistent questions. And I quote Rosenberg at length in the book because I think he's a great example of what we're finding today in the secular mindset. But what Rosenberg has hit on, without getting into those specifics, I just want to back up a little bit. Rosenberg, though, is willing to admit, as are many other atheist philosophers and atheist thinkers, that life's biggest questions are just that they are these questions that continue to be asked by every age and every culture. Why is that? Well, I think it's because those are the deeply human questions. By virtue of what we are, these are the things that matter most to us. Now, there's many factors why we aren't asking those questions today like we, have perhaps in the past. And I think one of those is something we've already talked a little bit about. I think we just keep ourselves so darn busy. that we're not sitting back to ponder life's biggest questions. Usually life's biggest question is going to come up after you've had two or three drinks with your buddies at the pub. And as much as those conversations can go in interesting directions, that's not necessarily the sort of environment where you're going to come to really start to uncover the real answers to these things.
Yeah.
So I just think that one of the big factors is just we're too busy and we're too centered in on ourselves, trying to seek out social approval through, you know, the many kinds of social media out there, trying to make a name for ourselves, make that, big career move or whatever it happens to be. I think we just need to slow down, put ourselves into more solitude, because that's where we encounter a lot of the answers to these questions.
Totally agree. So Matt, let's get practical for just a minute. We talked about, as a father, what do we do? Let's ask the question on, If you're a priest listening right now, we have shout out to all of our priests that listen. If you're a priest right now, what do you, Matt Nelson, want to hear from a priest to help engage you with the nuns or help, you know, pique interest in some of these people? And then also as a lay person, as members of the body of Christ, as the church, what do we need to do that we're not doing well? Mm-hmm. So there's two questions there.
Yeah. So what I would say to priests is, are you asking the big questions from the pulpit? I mean, the sacred scriptures, whether they state them explicitly or implicitly, are full of these sorts of queries that we should be considering. And the thing is, any of the priests that are listening to this, they know full well that they are spiritual father to those in the pews and those in their parish. They're the shepherd. And so just like a father at home who across the kitchen table or you know, in the driver's seat as they're driving their children somewhere, they too have an obligation to be teaching and asking good questions, good open-ended questions that are going to stimulate those, like their spiritual children in this case, to think and eventually to come to answers, to come to decisions about these things. So I'd say, like, first of all, how can you, in your homilies, when you're preaching, how can you find a way to ask these questions in a stimulating way where you're going to bring people into that conversation? I mean, a lot of priests will know that after Mass, people will come up to them after they've delivered a particularly powerful homily and they'll say, you know, that, you know, what you said today really hit me. This is where part two happens, where you can carry on that conversation, you know, at some point. So that's one thing, is like, look for opportunities, whether it would be when you're preaching or in one-on-one encounters, to have these serious questions. You know, as a spiritual father of those in your parish, you have a sort of obligation to, you know, keep people engaged with this, with the big questions of life, which are inherently religious. That's where I would start.
Matt,
it's a simple answer, but
yeah, I think
it's a good answer. Do you think the Socratic method, just the idea of asking questions, is poised to make a comeback, so to speak?
I think it should. I mean, I don't think that way of dialoguing and of keeping your interlocutor engaged in your conversation, I don't think that's ever going to become outdated. We got to get better at it, though. So, yeah. You know, one way we can do this, is something that I've done in my own parish, is I kind of set up these Q&A nights where we'd usually do them for 2 hours. And there was a lot of, you know, there's been a lot of nights when we've done them where we could have kept on going, believe it or not. But we set up these Q&A nights, and I would show for about the first 20 minutes of the night different videos. Maybe it's a Protestant preacher who's, you know, giving a sermon on why you shouldn't be Catholic. Or maybe it's Christopher Hitchens talking about how religion poisons everything, or, you know, whatever. I show videos that aren't boring that are going to bring up these big issues. And then I open the table, and everyone in the room is allowed to just kind of tackle whatever they saw, whatever's on their heart at the moment. And I just moderate. And at times I'll teach or I'll explain. But for the most part, I try to, you know, get the dialogue kind of bouncing back and forth from the tables. And those are super fruitful nights. So I think that's a practical thing that we could be doing in parishes, is, you know, start to teach people how to do the Socratic method. And when we do that, yeah, we're all Catholics, but we would find disagreements sometimes, and we'd have, kind of be able to hash out disagreements in a live scenario where everyone else is, you know, kind of able to be part of that as well. So that's one way it could be done, I guess.
Matt, one of the things I think our Protestant brothers and sisters are a lot better at than what we are as Catholics is just inviting people to Mass or inviting people to their church. Mm-hmm. I've heard before that a lot of people who've been a following Catholic and then they've come back to the church, they ask, well, what was it? What caused you to come back? And they just said, I was invited. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what? That's what it is? It's you were just invited? Like,
yeah.
It blows my mind how, you know, at Christmas time or Easter time, we have Protestant brothers and sisters that are asking everybody, come to our church. Come check it out. Come check it out.
Mm-hmm.
I have been very guilty of not inviting anybody to a Mass at, you know, especially during our big Easters or Christmases. What are your thoughts there? Like, shouldn't we be doing that better?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think the, you know, one approach is just the bold approach where you just ask, just, you know, you just kind of step out and ask the question, you know, would you like to come with me to Mass? And that can very much be appropriate in a lot of situations. But one of the things that I want to encourage people to do is continue to work on becoming a better question asker and a better listener. These are sort of the two steps, I think, that lead us to that place where not only can we feel more comfortable putting out that invitation once we've kind of established a rapport with the person we're speaking with, but also we earn sort of the right to ask that question. Maybe it becomes more attractive to the person across from us to come with us. So I think like that's the big thing is like, let's show that we're not indifferent to where the other person stands. Let's ask them questions and save the apologetics until the right time and just sit back and hear where they're coming from. And those things that they seem indifferent about, life's persistent questions. I mean, I keep coming back to those, but that's at the root of this, right? We just mm-hmm. need to, I mean, that's, it's hibernating there. Like we just need to wake up that bear, so to speak, inside them. And they'll start pondering these questions seriously. So we got to kind of let them talk their way there, I think, sometimes.
Matt, we just have a couple minutes left. Who did you write the book for? Is this a book to read, to prepare yourself? Is it the kind of book you'd give to your nun friend? Both?
Yeah, I would say both. But, you know, I was writing this book especially thinking of young Catholics who are on campus or who are in the work in their work environment, in the workplace, and just in the everyday lives in the secular world, who are encountering people who just couldn't care less about these sorts of things. And I think it's the sort of book that could be given to somebody who is an indifferentist, but I also think it's a great training manual.
Well,
or at least I hope so.
Matt, we thank you so much for coming on the Catholic Man Show today. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. Matt Nelson was our guest. Go check out his book, Just Whatever. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.